From the Draco Vista Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, unlocking secrets of writing, conversing with masters of the craft, and just having a lot of fun. It's the Dragon Page, cover to cover.
And welcome to another show. I'm Michael Armenengay.
And I am Michael Stackpole.
Yes, we got your bag here. Did you see that?
Yes. I love that. Yes, this reads disposable bullshit bag, seals bullshit in.
That's right. Yes,
there we go.
There we go. We're all ready for this show. So glad to be here.
Yeah, but it's not a sufficient size to like cut eye holes in and there wear over the head, which would be, because God knows, actually, if we had those, I got people I'd pass them out to.
There you go. So, interesting news today. There's some things happening out there in the world, I think.
There are. Let's see. In a at a book festival in Cartagena, Colombia, Jonathan Franzen, author of The Corrections and numerous other books, literary wonder
yeah,
child.
One of those things.
Yes, one of those guys. Came out and said he absolutely hates e-books.
Really?
He thinks they're horrible. and really attributes to them the ruin of the world.
You damn kids, get off my lawn.
Now, he previously was quoted. These are not part of the quotes of the talk that he gave in Cartagena, but he was previously quoted as saying, it's doubtful that anyone with an internet connection in his workplace is writing good fiction.
Ooh.
Yeah, wow. I thought that was brilliant. Now this is a guy.
So hear that, all you people.
There
you better
go.
Cut
Absolutely.
The cord. You're done.
That's right. But only after you listen to our show.
That's right.
Okay. Now this is from Franzen. It was noted in these articles, and you can find them all over the place. When he goes to write, okay, he plugs the Ethernet port in his computer so he can't get on the internet.
Okay.
He takes the game board out of his computer so he can't play any games.
ADD much?
And he wears noise-canceling headphones so won't be interrupted.
Wow.
Okay? And I'm thinking, my first thought was actually, what, you don't have Wi-Fi in your house? What are you? What is this?
Caveman? What's going on?
What is this, 1995? I mean, you know, good Lord. He must still have dial-up.
You know. He signs out of the AOL account.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. There you go. And it's, so it's totally mind-boggling.
Wow.
And what's important here, is, I think, what's important here is for all the rest of us to realize that, you know, and we've heard this, I mean, literally, you know, in recent years, there have been actors who say, don't wait for movies to come out on DVD. You have to go see them in the theater. They're meant to be seen in the theater.
Sure.
As if books are meant to be read on moldy old paper,
mm-hmm.
that there's no other way to actually enjoy them.
And the content somehow magically gets better because it's printed on a page.
Right, exactly. Or you know, imagine what you would think if somebody said, oh, hey, look, a filet mignon is the only way to eat beef.
Right.
You know, ignore hamburger.
Yeah.
You know, it's the only way to eat beef. And the fact is that no, look, there are some movies that I want to go to a theater to see and enjoy.
To be perfectly honest, I've actually read several blogs recently in the last year or so that are actually better than a lot of the books that I've been reading, just because the guy is really good at what he's doing, and it's a different medium.
It's
a different way of reading, but once you get past that and really look at the prose that's being put down, some of it's pretty impressive.
Right, and I think what you've got...
Mer Lafferty is a perfect example
right.
of that. Mer does a fantastic job on her blog.
What you're getting Franzen and a number of others doing is confusing or conflating aesthetic value with the purpose of that particular story. Okay. If being on moldy old paper, if being printed were what conferred sanctity
right.
on literature, then all the Penny Dreadfuls, all of the dime novels, all of the old pulp magazines would be, you know, I mean, we'd be venerated as sort of saints relics.
Exactly.
In bookstores somewhere.
Oh, we'd have them behind glass somewhere. It's like, oh, these can't be, we can't disturb them or get them. Yeah, and I know what you're saying. It's crazy.
Look, there's no denying, and we have never, ever on this show denied that the aesthetics of a well-made book, of feeling that binding, of the scent of it.
Absolutely.
You know, the crackle of those pages. We've never denied that that is without a doubt a sensual pleasure.
I've still got a wall of books out there.
Absolutely.
I mean, I should take a picture and post this because, I mean, I have
You really should, actually.
I really
yeah.
should. It's a 20-foot wall of books. Eight and a half feet tall, and I mean, it is loaded for bear.
And in the guest room in my house, okay, I have got the same thing. I mean, I have got two walls of that room, floor to ceiling shelves, just chock full of volumes.
Have you seen? If you haven't been to libraryporn.com, go check it out. It is awesome.
There you go.
People's libraries, they take pictures of them and post them, and some of these are just spectacular. There's a part of me that will never be away, give that up. But what I'm discovering is that in my library, I'm getting very choosy and very picky and very focused on what stays on those shelves and what goes away.
Well, and it's really funny. I've been talking to people that have got a property and they're interested in having me write for them. And as I look at what they're doing, you know, one of the things that comes to mind, even before we start, you know, talking numbers, is I looked at their most recent books, and those books are coming out in hardback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, as far as I'm concerned, is a plus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so here I am adding value to a possible future project without even knowing how much they might pay.
Right.
Just because there is that opportunity, not because that's going to reflect more sales for me, but it would be cool to have.
Right.
You know,
it's the trophy factor.
It is.
And
it is.
And
absolutely.
Here's the thing: is that as we've been talking about this over the years about the ebook and the phenomenon of ebooks and how it's going to replace, it's not going to replace books, folks. I really don't believe that it's going to replace hardback, well-crafted editions of books. What it may do is it may gut the paperback market. Because why buy a paperback when you can just download a digital copy of it?
There's going to be competition there, but I think what's more important, and again, for our authors who are looking down the line, and right now all of you guys should be worrying about writing, but this is something to keep in the back of your brain, is that when you go further down the line, when you get to the point of having your book and you're going to bring it out yourself, one of the other things that you're going to look at is the possibility of servicing that segment of the market that likes that physical book aesthetic.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that, and we'll talk with, I've got a friend who did a really nice Kickstarter project. We're going to set up an interview with him. So he can talk about that. But when you look at these projects, like Kickstarter projects, there are guys who will, for a basic donation, you'll get an ebook copy of the thing. And for a little bit higher participation, you get mentioned in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll get a trade paperback copy of the thing. But for a really high donation, there are a limited number of signed books that are going to have that leather binding, that are going to be printed on that better paper. To go to that market of those people who like these books and who want that keepsake volume.
Absolutely.
And you and I have talked about this over and over and over again. The book as souvenir.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that I so love this story, I want to be able to have a copy of it on my shelf. Now, this is an idea that came to me the other day, and I'll just toss it out for anybody else. Okay, so for all of you who are going, I don't have enough shelf space in my house for books.
Right.
Okay, but I really like seeing all my books on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
I have a brilliant idea for you. Okay, this is a brilliant idea. All right, so, you know, go out to these stores, and the prices are falling, of places that are selling digital frames.
Oh,
okay?
Wow.
And you can scan the covers of all of your books.
That is
awesome.
And
drop them into the digital frames, and you can put them on your shelf, and you can just have them sliding through.
Oh,
you have your slideshow of your books.
That is awesome.
Well, see, I had figured this out.
I am so going to do that.
Well, there you go. But I had figured this out the second I saw the iPad. second I saw the iPad, it was really funny because
I just saw a cartoon of this morning. Yeah. There was a great illustration of the guy has this gigantic empty bookshelf, this room full of gigantic empty bookshelf, and there's an iPad, a Nook, and a Kindle, and the guy goes, "Wow, you got a great collection."
Well, there you go. But when I first saw the video rolling out the iPad and everything like that, they had a picture frame thing, and I'm going, "Holy crap, this is perfect." I get cover shots of every one of my books. When I go to a signing, I put up a little easel. I set that in cover mode and let it go. And it was really funny because the very first World Fantasy when the iPads were out, Bob Vardaman and I were at the big signing they have on Friday nights, and we were sitting next to each other. And he had an easel with his iPad. I had one with mine, and we both had these digital slideshows of our covers going by. What was terribly funny about it is, nobody who came for autographs cared, but there were a dozen authors that came by and said, "Oh, that's cool. Now I have to get one of those." It was like, yes, their last excuse, the last bastion of what was separating them from getting this sort of thing. But digital picture frames are so inexpensive nowadays.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know that you can do that. I mean, the other alternative you obviously have is if you have a widescreen TV and you're going to be having friends come over, you can very easily have the widescreen TV displaying those covers doing that slideshow.
My Apple TV.
Exactly.
I got my Apple TV that I can just basically set up to slide whatever group of cover art that I want.
So, there you go. Absolutely. I mean, it's just, to me, it's just a very cool, cool thing. I mean, better living with technology.
There you go.
So that's one of those things that we can do. But let's not forget, I mean, what's really important here is that for writers, we have to understand that there is a demographic out there that is interested in this aesthetic. And so you have to give some consideration as to, are you going to try and address that or aren't you? And I think as we go forward, the print-on-demand stuff will make it a lot easier.
Oh, certainly.
You know, I'm looking at, say, for Dragon Con, you know, calling a print-on-demand or having a book prepped and, say, getting 20 or 10, 15 copies delivered to me at Dragon Con. You know, just drop ship to me there. I can sell them at the convention and then just take whatever's left over home with me. So that's a very convenient way to be able to address people who don't like ebooks, but they still want to read your stuff and they want to support you as a writer.
Right.
And I think the other thing that we have to do is just understand that right now, because we are still in this war over ebooks. There was another article that came out today that said, you know, Amazon is going to miss on earnings, and that they've had declining revenue and they're probably going to lose money in the first quarter because they're investing more in infrastructure, so they're not going to be as profitable and may actually take a loss. And people are touting that as negative in terms of ebooks. Or there was another survey that came out of the Digital World a program where book publishers were down on the idea of tablets being good readers. Ignore all of that stuff. That, you know, it's more than the camel's nose is in the tent here, kids.
Right.
Don't worry about them saying that, well, the whole camel isn't in. It will be.
Yeah, exactly.
Just take care of your writing and realize that you're going to keep your eyes open for the different ways to present this stuff.
The only reason it's not in the tent is because it lifted up its head, took the whole tent with it, and you're in
basement. Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
All right. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Dragon Moon Press, bringing you some of the most exciting new authors in sci-fi and fantasy. Their titles open new worlds and bring unforgettable characters to readers just like you. Bring the magic and wonder of dragons to your child with Dragon's Fire, Wizard's Flame by Michael R. Manningay. Write your own story with a complete guide to writing fantasy. Books by Dragon Moon Press, sci-fi, fantasy, and beyond. Order these titles from your local retailer or visit the website at dragonmoonpress.com.
And go check out Dragon Moon Press, because they got some really cool new titles that are coming out. I've been following them lately on Facebook. And,
very good.
Gwen's been really good about posting up stuff that it looks interesting. Looks very interesting.
Yep, and you guys should make sure to follow me at Mike Stackpole on Twitter. And Dragon Page Cover to Cover has got a Twitter feed. And I think it's, what, at Dragon Page it's C2C?
At Dragon Page C2C, yep.
Okay, yeah. You want to follow both of those, because especially, you know, we tend to forward and retweet a lot of stuff for writers and
exactly.
things.
And so. The Facebook as well. There is actually a Dragon Page Facebook now. It's only got 200 poor people that are actually liked us, but please go like our page.
It's the same with my fan page. It's only like 200 people. It's like,
there you go.
What can you do?
Yeah. Go check us out. We got some cool stuff there. Like us. Please like
That's
us.
That's right. Yeah.
All righty. Yeah, so, anyway, on to some writing stuff.
So you were saying in the last show that you had just begun to get some material down on the first chapter and those things. And
well, what's really difficult about this is that I'm trying really hard not to write two books at the same time.
Sure.
And it's really difficult because in the back of my head, while I'm pulling this book apart, I'm going, okay, that goes in the next one, that goes in the next one, that goes in the next one. And I'm all of a sudden writing the next one as I'm trying to put together the first one. And I have a feeling that's going to really trip me up down the road here if I don't let that go.
Okay, so what you need to do is something, and I'm sure that other writers have got different names for it, and I'm sure mystery writers use it all the time. It's what I refer to as a toss ahead sheet.
Okay.
And what this is, in the case of a mystery, just give you a simple example. The detectives are standing over a body, and they look down at the coroner and say, you know, if there's flesh underneath her fingernails, and, you know, how fast can you type it and get us the DNA report?
Right.
And the coroner says, you know, I'll fast track it. We'll hopefully have it in 3 days.
Right.
So on my toss ahead sheet, I write down one DNA report, 3 days.
Okay.
And as I'm going through the book later on, because I've got the general hints of what's going on, but as I'm going through the book later on, I need to make sure that every little factoid I put on the toss ahead sheet gets dealt with.
Okay, gotcha.
Gets answered. So it just saves you some time in the editing. Now, when you're looking at books or doing a series or doing even just a single book, but a fairly large book, this toss ahead sheet is where you can put down general ideas. The wouldn't it be cool if
thing. Okay.
And you just jot those down. You handwrite them. You don't even write them on the computer or anything like that, because you'll spend too much time there. This is a quick reminder. You jot some notes down. Then when you're done that chapter or you're done writing for that day, go ahead and look at your toss ahead sheet. If there's more notes that you want to write down, you write them down and you let it percolate in the back of your mind.
Okay.
And that'll generate more stuff. And you just keep expanding those notes. You're not locking yourself into anything.
Sure.
But what you're doing is that you're defining for yourself, this is operational planning stuff that I'm doing as opposed to writing stuff I'm doing.
Right.
And so you split it out so you don't run into that problem of thinking, oh, my God, I'm trying to write two books at once.
Right. Okay.
You know, you focus on the one and you're just saying, here are the scraps. Because I guarantee a couple things are going to happen. One, especially with the toss ahead stuff that's going into a future volume. A lot of that will change when you finish the current
volume. Well, and that's what I'm concerned about, is that I don't want to start writing towards the stuff that I know I already have. And this goes back to something that I think we've talked about many, many, many times on this show, and that is that not everything that you write is gold.
Yes.
You can, the delete button is your key, is your friend. Key is your friend. And a lot of times stuff needs to just go away.
Absolutely.
And just because you spent an hour punching it into your computer does not mean it has to go someplace.
Right.
And I've always that was the turning point, is why this book actually happened in the first place, because I learned that a long time ago. That's how I wrote this book, was that I realized that a lot of this stuff didn't need to stay, because I was going down a completely different direction. I lost like about 15 chapters. because it just went a place I didn't want it to go. I didn't like how it was put together, and it was just like delete, 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 delete. And I'm just like the whole time just crying, going, oh my God, that was 2 weeks of my life. Well, I can't believe I'm doing this. And then I got done with it and I was like, oh wow, I can breathe. I don't have, sure. I'm not bogged down by that.
Yep.
And as soon as it was gone, it was like, okay, now I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And boom, got a new burst of energy and I was right there.
And that's important. I mean, when I was doing Of Limited Loyalty, the book that came out last December, there was a chapter very late on in the book. I had written a scene. It was a conversation between two characters revealed something that's fairly important. And I had written it from one character's point of view. And as I got down to the end of it, I realized that, no, if I went with it with that character's point of view, it wasn't going to be very satisfying, wasn't going to work. And so I literally made a note at the end of that chapter, just a parenthetical note saying, rewrite from second character's point of view, and went on. So I didn't even delete it at that point, but I just reminded myself that this is what I was going to do, which is fairly easy to do. I was able to, monkey things around. And generally, when you actually say rewrite from the other character's point of view, you snip one line of dialogue in a dialogue, you reorder the dialogue, and it works out great. This is really funny how that absolutely works. So that's a really good thing. You will never feel so free and liberated as when you realize that you can throw some stuff away.
Exactly.
And, if you don't like the idea of throwing stuff away, put it in a folder, tell yourself you're going to use it later. You never will, but put it in a folder and tell yourself you're going to use it later.
if you really have a hard time letting go of it.
Right, exactly.
It really is, you're absolutely right. It's so liberating because it's like, wow, I don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's like, I'm free to do this.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to sort of be self-aware, and but by the same token, give yourself a break, because the other thing you don't want to do, and this is the thing that kills a lot of books, is when people can't turn that self-editor off.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Oh, I'm bad about that. I'm so bad about that.
We have said it before, and we'll continue to say it. Look, perfection is what you get in the second, third, and fourth drafts.
Mm-hmm.
The first draft, you are digging a hole.
Right.
Okay. And sweating whether or not your shovel is full or half full as you throw dirt out of the hole is wasting time. Just dig the damn hole.
And figure it out.
That's right. Get the words down. You can always change things, because here's the other thing that's going on, that's happening, and a lot of people don't have the chance to take a step back and sort of figure this stuff out, is you're going to be learning about the characters and you're going to be learning about what's going on in the story as you're writing.
Right.
Okay. So that the stuff that you want to be perfect can't be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's the perfect state for that thing doesn't exist yet. Because you haven't refined it enough, you haven't figured out what's there, and so it's critically important for you just to go ahead, knock the stuff out, and then refine it later. And it just as we talked about with that toss ahead sheet, you may think you're heading in one particular direction, you stop, and then you say, oh, if this happens, then that may have to happen. You put that on the toss ahead sheet. Later, as you're reviewing the toss ahead sheet, you go, okay, if I'm actually going to work toward what I'm tossing ahead here, then this means this has also got to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that right there is where the magic happens in what you're doing. If you have to ask yourself a question of why would somebody go nose up with a dragon and be defiant?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's like, what triggers them to do that? What in their past makes them think that it's right?
Right.
What in their past makes it think it's worth them sacrificing their life to go nose up with this dragon?
Mm-hmm.
And once you've determined what that element is, then you have to figure out, how do I layer that back into the story so that when I get to this point, it makes perfect sense?
Right.
You know? And that's a really, it might seem that is obvious, and it probably should be, but it generally isn't, because we don't stop and think about those things.
Gotcha.
And so we need to, and that helps define the character's journey as we go forward. So, yeah.
Good stuff. I think that's actually a good spot to stop,
too. It is a good spot to stop.
Yeah, I think we're going to call that a show, and hopefully we gave you something interesting to think about.
Yep.
Please send your comments in. It's 206-350-READ. That's 206-350-7323. We really, really need to hear from you folks.
And don't forget that call out that we had. Where do you guys look for book reviews? And if any of you guys decided that you're going to take our advice and start doing book reviews, you know, let us know so we can be assembling our list, because that's really critically important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's going to do it. Visit us on Facebook, both Mike and I.
Facebook definitely. And Second Life and
Twitter and all that other fun stuff.
Buy stuff and tell people to read our work.
There you go. That's always good. Or send us money. Just send us money. It'll be great.